Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text Number 49. Admanaha pitra putrabhyam. Anumeya bhavapyayo. Na bhavapyaya vashtunam. Abhigya dhaya lakshana. Admanaha pitra putrabhyam. Anumeyo bhavapyayo. Na bhavapyaya vashtunam. Abhigya dhaya lakshana. Admanaha pitra putrabhyam. Numeyo bhavapyayo. Na bhavapyaya vashtunam. Abhigya dhaya lakshana. Admanaha. One's own. Pitra. From the father or ancestors. Putrabhyam, and the son, anumeya, can be surmised. Bhava, birth. Apyaya, and death. Na, is no longer. Bhava, apyaya vastunam. Of all that is subject to generation and destruction. Abhigya, one who is in proper knowledge. Dvaya, by these dualities. Lakshana, characterize. Translation. By the death of one's father or grandfather, one can surmise one's own death. And by the birth of one's son, one can understand the condition of one's own birth. A person who thus realistically understands the creation and destruction of all material bodies is no longer subject to these dualities. Purport. The Lord has described the nine stages of the material body, beginning with impregnation, gestation and birth. One may argue that a living entity cannot remember his presence in the mother's womb, nor his birth and early infancy. The Lord therefore states here that one can experience these phases of bodily existence by studying one's own child. Similarly, although one may hope to live forever by experiencing the death of one's father, grandfather or great-grandfather, one has definite proof that the material body will die. A sober person, knowing the soul to be eternal, therefore gives up false identification with the temporary, unreliable body and takes shelter of the devotional service of the Lord. By this process, one can escape the artificial imposition of birth and death. Admana pitra putrabhyam anumeyo bhavapyaya na bhavapyaya vashtunam abhigyodhaya lakshana. By the death of one's father or grandfather, one can surmise one's own death. And by the birth of one's son, one can understand the condition of one's own birth. A person who thus realistically understands the creation and destruction of material bodies is no longer subject to these dualities. I'll just read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. This is from chapter 7, text 29. Jara marana mokshaya mam asicca yatantiye te brahma tadvidu kuchnam ajatmam karma chakilam. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. And the last verse of the seventh chapter, Sari Bhutari Devam Mam Sari Yagyam Chayevidu Priyana Kale Chapichamam Tevidu Yukta Chaitasa. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation, of the demigods, and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So this verse here, of course, is describing those who are avidya, one who is in proper knowledge. So those in proper knowledge, they can certainly understand the nature of the different transformations of the material body, described here as nine stages of the material body, beginning from conception to death. Although a person may not remember some of the early stages of these within oneself, or cannot see into the future, the latter stages, still by looking at others who are going through these stages, he can understand that I will go through exactly the same thing. I know when that Prabhu passed away recently, Andrew Prabhu, I had different devotees ask me, what can we take from this? And of course, one of the basic understandings, of course, is that we're all going to have to leave our body, even if we're devotees. At some stage, death will come, and we'll have to leave everything. So it's a very sobering thought. Of course, that understanding may be there, that even as a devotee we may die, even when death comes to a devotee, or suffering comes to a devotee, even suffering comes, many devotees fail to understand, that they struggle to understand, how is this nice devotee has suffered? How is it that this nice devotee has died in this way or that way? But the very nature of this world is that everyone dies. There's no exception. And everyone suffers. We see in the prayers to Queen Kunti that she described to Lord Krishna all the different types of tribulations and distresses, leading up to a great war, so many deaths and the loss of so many relatives and so much difficulty. And Srila Prabhupada, in lecturing on that particular verse, of course, you know, his first comment is that, you know, so many difficulties happened to the devotees because this is the nature of the material world. You know, there are, of course, other understandings as to how Krishna deals with the devotee in the material world, and you know, what is Krishna's plan in the material world. So these are certainly further things for understanding, but the basic point is that everyone that comes to the material world must suffer, because that's the nature of the material world. If you're in the spiritual world, these things wouldn't happen. You know, when the Pandavas are in the spiritual world, they don't have to fight battles, you know, with demons. Even when Krishna is in the spiritual world, anyone in the spiritual world, they don't have to go through all these difficulties. This is the nature of the material world. So that's a fundamental understanding, of course, that devotees should have. That I'm in the material world, and whatever I do, I will have to die, and when I die, everything will be taken from me. All of my work will be finished, all of my plans will be finished, all my relationships with you know, so many people in this world will be finished. My, you know, fame, reputation, wealth, body, everything will be finished. So, a person with knowledge, a vigyaha, they have that understanding. And I've mentioned, you know, the story several times that when I was about 7 or 8 years old, while washing the dishes for my mother, and looking at my father's very sharp knives, and realizing that, you know, just they were so very sharp, extremely sharp, they were like razor blades, and but looking at them, I understood that you know, I could easily be killed accidentally, or, you know, and then I thought, well, you could even kill yourself on purpose. And then I thought, well, why don't people kill themselves? You know, what are we living for? So I'm just washing the dishes and thinking of these things about 7 or 8 years old. And I started to reflect on, you know, like this verse in essence, that although I couldn't remember my own, you know, birth and what have you, and I certainly couldn't conceive of, you know, what I'd be doing at 20, 30, 40, 50, or as an old man, or at death, but I could see it happening to those around me, and therefore I could see what would happen to me by looking at what had happened to them. And I thought to myself that, you know, I will spend so many years in school, which I didn't really like the idea of. I just wanted to play, as most, you know, boys of that age do. You know, play marbles and little soldiers and what have you. And just wander the streets and just have little adventures. So I wasn't really excited about that. And then I thought, well, school will finish after so many years, and then I have to work in a job, like my father, and which I knew what my father did as a job, and I wasn't too happy about that. And I could see so many different fathers in the neighbourhood, and they're all off to work, and I thought, well, that's, you know, not very interesting. That doesn't look very appealing at all. And then I thought, and then with the money that you work with, then I will have a family. So I thought, well, that you know, maybe that might be nice. Have a nice partner and some children, a little house, a couple of pets. Didn't mind that part, but then my next thought sort of, you know, became, and then I thought, but then they're all going to die. I'm going to grow old, and I'm going to, you know, work, and the children will get to just the age where there's a nice relationship and everything like that, and then I'm going to go. Some of them may die, and then ultimately they're all going to die. And I thought, oh, gee, you know, there's the one thing I thought was perhaps a little bit bearable, all of a sudden become a bit of a nightmare. So, you know, because it just thought to me, you know, why the thought occurred that why people don't kill themselves? Why are they so determined to live? And so I just run through the course of my life, and I thought, well, I still can't see, you know, this why are they so determined? There's not really a lot on offer. But by looking at others, I could actually see the duration of my life. Of course, I have gone through those different stages. You know, I could see then, even at 7, 8. So I went to school. I never really liked it. I went to school basically for a social. You know, it was like a social event for me. If my friends weren't there, I used to, you know, not go. I got expelled from one school, and then they sent me to another school. I went to the school at the start of the year, and the strange thing was that I was very unfamiliar with this new school. And the teachers, of course, no one knew me. Most of the students had been going there for many years. I couldn't work out which class I was supposed to be in. And I'd go and sit in a class, and the teachers would look at me as if to say, "And what are you doing here?" And the students would look at me and say, "Well, what are you doing here? You know, like, where did you come from?" So I couldn't quite work out, you know, where I... So I used to just go down the beach. That's the solution to the problem. With my younger sister. And so this was year 5. And so anyway, I would go to school perhaps once a week, once a fortnight, and I did make one or two friends enough to find out, you know, what work had been done. I copied their notes, worked out when the exams were, and I used to just turn up for the exams, and I used to just copy the notes and hand them in. So at the end of the year, I actually got really good marks, although I actually spent the whole year, I didn't go to school that whole year, you know. I spent, you know, about 8 or 9 days out of the 10 days in a fortnight down the beach. Or, you know, my sister failed. she didn't do so well. But but previously I went to school because it was a good social life. But then, of course, you know, they're all different people, so I lost interest. But I still managed to get really good marks that year, and had a good time. But you know, the things that I saw that would happen, which I didn't really have interest, that actually happened. And of course, then I had to work, which didn't work out very well either. I think I held one job down for about 9 months. I think that was a record. That was I think I was in the workforce for about 2 years or something. Something like that. And then I became a devotee. I thought, that's about enough. But, of course, in those days, work was a lot different. You could just... you could walk into a place. You know, if you wanted a job, you just walked in and you'd say, "I'm just looking for a bit of work," and I'd say, "All right," and I'd just give you a job. Yeah, that's a fact. So I used to travel around Australia, I hitchhiked around Australia, and I'd work for a couple of days. You just walk, you know, you run out of money, you just walk into a place, oh, I need a job, oh, okay. So, you know, and you get enough money, and then you just move to the next town. You know, your money runs out, and you just like that, you just go around Australia. But, so I didn't work a lot. And then I became a devotee, which was good because I thought, you know, of all of the things that I can see coming, I've sort of avoided, you know, like a lifetime of just working for nothing. So I was quite happy with that. And of course, you know, having a family in Krishna consciousness is different to just, you know, the struggle for existence in the material world. Because, you know, you have the pleasure of everything is devotional service. You're bringing up children and helping them to become devotees. And, you know, there's a nice relationship between yourself and the partner, also cooperating to help each other, you know, to be Krishna conscious. you know, of course, the life of a devotee, again, there is so much nectar from devotional service that family life is really, you know, just a little side issue. It's not like the non-devotees. The non-devotees, you know, their family life is the absolute end-all and be-all of their existence. And of course, because there's really not so much pleasure in that, then quite often they need to be fairly dosed up with tranquilizers, intoxications, and what have you, to you know, carry off the illusion that they're enjoying. But for a devotee, you know, family life is a lot different. I was speaking to someone the other day. I can't remember who it was. About family life as a devotee. you know, family life as a devotee, because, you know, it's just one festival after another, you know, there's one feast after another, you know, one kirtan after another, you know. And, you know, you catch up with the family, you know. During and in between all of that, traveling Sankirtan with the family. I remember I used to sell paintings, and I would I never ever stopped my activities when I had a family. I always just did the same activities. So I used to take my daughter out in a pram. She was about 4 or 5 years old. So she would sit in the pram, I would put my paintings underneath, and we would just walk through the streets, and I would knock on the doors, and people would see, you know, the salesman there with the pram, and yeah, they'd come in. So I would come in, and you know, they would offer some fruit and a drink, and quite often they had, you know, little children at home about the same age. So the children would play and have a little snack, which we'd offer to Krishna, and I would sell them some paintings like this. And then, you know, you just go for a stroll. So it was actually, you know, family life went on in a nice way. But at the same time, it was still, you know, for a devotee, family life is a lot different, because it is, you know, just the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So in that way, I sort of avoided, you know, the materialistic version of just the struggle for existence. So old age, I didn't avoid that. and death is coming. But, you know, old age, you see in the Bhagavatam, of course, there it describes Vidura was mentioning to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra is just in another world, and he's saying, you know, can you not see the signs of death and old age? You know, and he describes so many different symptoms. Symptoms which I'm starting to see in myself. I remember a few years ago, I was looking at, when was that? It was probably, I think up to the age of about 43, I had 20/20 vision. And I just, very, very, and just one day I was looking at the writing, and I was, on something, and I thought, gee, why do they keep writing things smaller and smaller and smaller? Like you just can't see them. And then someone else looked at that thing and just read it, and I thought, oh, it's not the writing, it's me. I can't actually, I was thinking it's just shrinking. And so I've got, the glasses and what have you. But I was noticing the other day, I write things quite big now, because, so I can see it without my glasses. And then I was looking at that the other day, and I was thinking, I can't see that any longer either. So you can see how, or I'm seeing that, I'm not seeing very well at all, but through my intelligence, I can perceive that, the body is closing down. And, gradually, the body will just completely close down, and death will be there. Of course, death can come very quickly without notice. And even if one has some idea of the timing of one's death, still, Krishna has, sometimes, according to Krishna's plan, that he can change that. So, we see that certain devotees, astrologically, you may not have been able to predict that a certain person would suddenly be taken out of this world. And sometimes, astrologically, a person should not have lived so long. But by Krishna's arrangement, these things are there. We see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it describes that Duryodhana, his life was reduced because he offended a chaste woman. He also, of course, offended the Pandavas themselves. One of the things we're discussing in Bhakti Bhai Bhava, that one who kills, but even if they insult or offend women, children, old men, brahmanas and cows, they, according to the nature of their offence, they immediately reduce the duration of their life. So, therefore we see that although one's life is certainly predestined, there are certain factors by which that duration of life can be severely reduced, that one can get such a severe karmic reaction, or that one's duration of life can be extended. We see that the yogis, they extend their life. The duration of life is measured. You get an exact duration of life, which is there within the time of birth. But we see that yogis, they take the number of breaths which are destined to them, which is their destined duration of life, and they extend their duration of life by the yogic process of pranayama. So the destiny is still there, and that they have a certain amount of breaths. When those breaths are finished, then death comes. But the yogis extend their life by very carefully using those breaths. And similarly, one's amount of breaths may be destined, but by excessive sense gratification, one can, get the minimum duration according to those breaths that one has. So the death is certainly predestined, but we also should understand that there are other factors, especially within the life of the devotee whose life is within the hands of Krishna. And therefore, of course, the point is that no one knows when death will come. Death can come at any moment. So, one who is wise or sober, they can perceive that, and they live their life accordingly. That they understand that when this body finishes, they will again have to take another birth in another body. And it can be any body within 8,400,000 different species. And one may think, well, I think I can guarantee that at least I'll come back as a human. But, to come back as a human being, if you look at all the different places on this planet and you start to pick a place where you'd like to take birth, there's probably what you can rule out about 90% of the places pretty quickly, right? And, I wouldn't want to take birth there. Well, that is, nowhere, in Siberia, too cold, and the Arctic regions. Let's leave out the Arctic regions where there is a any form of life. None of the deserts. Perhaps not in the middle of a jungle somewhere. Not in some of these war-torn countries. Perhaps somewhere in the Middle East or in South Africa. Not in some of these places where there's racial hatred. Not in some of these places where there's just extreme poverty, where people are dying every moment, even as we speak, little children, mothers just dropping dead from hunger. So we think, so there's a few places left, and one may think, I'll come back as a human in a nice place. Of course, we have no choice. We don't know. We can't pick and choose. You just get bang, you're into another womb, and you're squished up in the mother, and then you're going to 9 months later, you come out of the womb, and then you look around, oh my goodness, where am I? And then you've got a whole life, of again the same thing. And people may think, I'll come back, I've done some devotional service, I come back as a devotee, and I just start where I left off, which is a fact. But it's, you have to look at that consciousness, that if a person's thinking, I have such an opportunity now, wonderful temple, wonderful, association, nice prasadam, nice service, so many opportunities to become, but I'll not become serious about it now, I'll do that in my next life. So what will happen, of course, is you get to the next life and you think, so many opportunities, but I won't do it now, I'll do it in my next life, like this. So, the same danger that's facing, one may, in the next life, of course, one may not even get as far as one does in this life. So, it's a dangerous sort of a thought to think like that. I won't be so serious. Now, I'll just take birth again as a gurukuli. I'll have it all, Then I'll be okay. It's actually a very dangerous thought, because in the next life one will think the same thing. I've taken birth as a gurukuli, and I've got a nice opportunity, but I've had a good start, so maybe I'll just have a look around the material world for a little bit and just have a little break, and I'll just come back to it a little bit later on. Of course, Maya doesn't work like that. Once she gets you all entangled in material existence, it's like the fox that got its foot stuck in the tar. Maya's like that. You put the foot in the tar, and then you think, I'll put my other foot in it to get that one out. And then you've got two foot, so you get the fox has got his 2 feet in Maya, and he puts the back ones in, and then next thing he's got everything. That's the way Maya works. I'll just put one foot in, it'll be all right. And if I get stuck, I'll put like this. So, Indra Jumna Swami gives the example of quicksand. You start sinking in quicksand, and it can just suck you under, so quick that you just don't have the power, the time, you just disappear like that. Maya is very, very powerful, very powerful. So, a wise person would think that let me just finish up Krishna consciousness right now in this lifetime, so that there's no reason, I have no reason to take another birth, but certainly for the service of Krishna, I'm prepared to take birth after birth. But other than that, there is no reason to come back. A devotee who performs their devotional service in that sort of mood, then within the course of the day, of course, they're very very careful about wasting time. They can see how quickly time is going, and that before death comes, they've got to be expert that all I can see is Krishna. No matter what circumstances happen to me, if something really, bad happens to me, my mind is just fixed on Krishna. That's the practice, that's what I'm doing. All sorts of wonderful things are being offered by the material energy, and all I see is Krishna. That is the practice. So therefore, when death comes, I just see here is Krishna in another form, like that. Therefore, a devotee, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, that a devotee can actually, as we described earlier, a devotee doesn't have to give up or change their natural way of life in order to become Krishna conscious. Because the devotee becomes very sincere that in this life I'm going to finish up, doesn't mean that all the men suddenly take sannyas and the women also. One, in order to become Krishna conscious, one's natural life just goes on. And therefore, we see that Krishna said to Arjuna, it's not necessary for you to give up fighting. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that, whether one is a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, Sudra, man or woman, it doesn't matter, that by adding the process of Krishna consciousness, always thinking of Krishna, that all of them can become perfect. And I was listening to a lecture yesterday, Srila Prabhupada was giving the example that on a train, you have first class, section, you have the economy, what are they, first class, what do they call them? First class, second class, third class. So someone may think, oh, I am in, the last class, so, I'm not going to arrive at the destination. But actually, it doesn't matter. Whether you're in first class, so someone is a Brahmana by nature and by activities, someone is in second class, someone is in third class, they're a Sudra or even less, if they're all on that train, they're all going to the destination. Their ride may be, smoother or rougher according to their natural activities. And we see Arjun had to fight, so he was in middle class. a little bit rougher than perhaps some of the Brahmanas, of that era. But they're all going to the destination because they're all thinking of Krishna. And, it doesn't matter whether one is an adult or a child. We see here, Aravind, sitting, hearing. He may or may not understand the word I'm saying. Do you? Because he does. So, but it doesn't matter. Sometimes you get little babies, 5 years, and, what have you. And one may think, what is the value? They can't understand what the speaker is saying. But they're hearing. And therefore, and when there's chanting, they don't, you start chanting, a little two-year-old child hears Hare Krishna. They don't know, Krishna, that means Bhagavan, possessor of six opulences and fool like that. They just hear Hare Krishna, they start clapping and dancing. And they get the same benefit as everyone else who's clapping and dancing. So it doesn't matter, first class, second class, third class, if you're on the train, you're going back to Godhead. That's what Prabhupada says. What is that train? Is that you just think of Krishna. Always think of Krishna, become his devotee, worship him, offer your obeisances to him at that. And that can be done by everyone. So, becoming serious about this in this life, I will definitely, make it my last, I will achieve perfection, I will achieve this pure love of God, I will try and, follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. That doesn't mean that we have to artificially renounce so many things. Our natural life actually goes on. It just means that with our natural life, we have that seriousness to fix our mind on Krishna no matter what the circumstances. And therefore you see that a devotee gradually, as they chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam and associate and hear Shrimad Bhagavatam, gradually that love or that bhava and prema manifests within the heart, so that by the force of love they cannot help but see Krishna anywhere. Just in the same way that a mother, she will see the little shoes and she'll immediately think of the child, and she'll see some little toys and just immediately think of the child. Everywhere she looks, she's thinking of that child because of that strong love. She cannot get the child from her mind, not even for a second. Even when she's doing other things and working and talking to other people, the love for her child is there and it's just fixed. So in the same way as that bhava, that love, that emotion, transcendental emotion, naturally pours from the heart, one cannot help but think of Krishna. The reason that love is already there, it doesn't have to be added, it just has to, all the dirty things which are covering that love for Krishna have to be cleansed. And Prabhupada often say, you know, there are so many dirty things within the heart. The dirty things is all the upadis or false identification. You know, I am a man, I am woman, I am Brahmana, I am Kshatriya, I am, you know, Brahmacharini, I am Sannyas, you know, I am Indian, I am Australian. These are all the dirty things that as soon as we have some thought like that, then we will not think of Krishna, but we will think in terms of that identification and we will offer our service according to that contamination. As soon as we think, you know, I am this body, under any designation, we will immediately serve the body under that designation. And we will think of, you know, that service and everything in relation. But when we remove from the heart all those designations, false designations, material coverings, and we see our real designation that I am a spirit soul, I have nothing to do with the body, I am the eternal servant of Krishna, then that's where we serve that pure identification, and we always think of Krishna. And then that is the beginning of devotional service, and from that platform, of course, the intrinsic nature of the soul can begin to manifest. As long as we identify with the body, the intrinsic nature of the soul and the spiritual emotions of the soul cannot manifest. We actually have to cut that attachment to the identifying with the body, and then finish up identifying with the body, identify as the spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna. From that, that is the beginning point of bhakti actually. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one comes to the platform of Brahman, he is eligible to properly begin bhakti. You know, bhakti proper begins from the point that we realize I am a spirit soul. And then when that becomes one, you know, a devotee is always fixed in that consciousness, then the spiritual nature of the soul begins to manifest the spiritual emotions, which pure love which is not directed to anything, you know, in the material world for sense gratification, but love which is just directed solely to Krishna for the, you know, pleasure of the Lord. So therefore, you know, a devotee is very careful not to waste time. And if you think about it, you know, if you wake up in the morning, you think, today, this could be my last day. What would I do today if it was? Of all the things that I'm planning to do, if this was my last day, what will I be thinking throughout the course of today, and what will I be doing? And that's what Krishna is teaching, that, you know, you if that actually was your last day, you continue in your natural activities, but the only change is your consciousness, that you just completely rid yourself of false ego and completely become attached to always thinking of Krishna. If this was your last day, you'd just go about your normal activities, but your mind would be just absolutely riveted on Krishna. Everywhere you look, you see the sunshine, there's Krishna. You see a tree, there's Krishna. Krishna's in it. You know, something good happens, that is Krishna's mercy. Something bad happens, that is Krishna's mercy. That's the only difference. Otherwise, your activities would be the same. And if you maintain that consciousness, and then when death comes, and you think, yes, here's Krishna. Okay. And then if you do that, your whole life has been successful, and you never have to come back to the material world again. That is the perfection. That is the that is the goal. And of course, that is just the entrance to spiritual existence, spiritual activities in Krishna Loka. So, these of course are the thoughts of an intelligent person who can see life for what it is. This is the way they fill their mind. Otherwise, the other way is we can, become a fool, bury our head in the sand and just never think of death, birth, death, old age and disease. I've got so much time up my sleeve. Whatever happens, I'm a good person. Everything will work out. Unfortunately, that can get a person into a material body that will be very unpleasant. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. From Ruchi to the next stage? Or to get that Ruchi? The question? So just summarize that again. How to really get that strong Ruchi or taste for Krishna consciousness, and how to make that taste very intense and accelerate it to so advancement becomes very quick. There are five activities, of course, which are particularly powerful for doing that. Propelling one just even from the neophyte position, and even as a neophyte, one can still get such a powerful, taste, and even feel ecstatic symptoms, from time to time. And those five activities, of course, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, and residing in a holy place. So those five in particular, a devotee may have a special taste for one of those in particular. Of course, in Kali Yuga, all devotees chant Hare Krishna because, and that regulated chanting 16 rounds every day. Because if they don't do that, what happens is that the mind is so disturbed in Kali Yuga that, even whatever taste one has quickly becomes covered over. So the chanting, that is the foundation. But along with the chant, some devotees, the chanting itself, that, there's a special taste in it. They love to have kirtan, they love to, chanting the rounds, they like to chant extra rounds. They might like to help others to chant Hare Krishna. some devotees, it is the Srimad Bhagavatam. They just love to, be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association, speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Some it's deity worship. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Bombay, he was describing that one of his disciples, now this is 1974. Now 1974, of course some of his disciples were only been around for a few years. And he'd sent one of his disciples to another place in India in order to facilitate the preaching and to stay there and help maintain a centre. that devotee had gone from a center where there was a beautiful deity and he was involved in the deity worship, and when he got to this other place and there was no deity and he just a preaching center, he wrote a letter back to Srila Prabhupada and said, I need to get back to worship the deity. It's just, I don't know if I can function without deity worship. And Prabhupada said, this is bhava. You know, he can't live without deity worship. You know, his mind, you know, in the material world, they can't, there's sex, life, this, that, and the other. Devotee, you know, that bhava is there, even in a neophyte, so powerful. I can't live without some deities present. And we see even, there was one of our acharyas, I think it was, it might have been Jagannath Das Babaji, who had Sonagura, beautiful golden deities. And I think someone tried to steal them or something, and then he ended up giving them away. But then after that, he said to his servant, he said, I can't live without a deity. You have to give me another deity. And some devotees, they can't live without, you know, they must be absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing and chanting, some deity worship, some residing in the holy dham. You know, fills their entire being with satisfaction and spiritual delight. And, you know, if they're, holy dham, of course, is also the temple. And we see that some families who live away from the temple, you know, if they're not at the temple for 1 or 2 days, they just start to, you know, go cold turkey, you know, it's like the, and they just, we've got to go to the temple like this, you know, they've got to be there and see the deities and see the devotees and taste the prasadam, you know, and if they don't, they just go out of their minds. So that's bhava. Those five in particular, we see that Arjuna, again, as I said, everyone in this day and age chants Hare Krishna as the foundation. So we may be attached to any one of those, and that will guarantee us perfection. You know, association with devotees. Some devotees love to be, you know, with devotees, just constantly be with them, and doing anything but just to be with devotees like this. So Arjuna, of course, he fought for Krishna, and one may say, he didn't chant Hare Krishna, but Srila Prabhupada was pointing out how each service is absolute. That he said, Arjuna was chanting Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, constantly within his mind because he was always thinking of Krishna. So he didn't formally sit down and chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, Hare Krishna like this, and wear the robes and what have you. He was dressed as a warrior, he went out on the battlefield, but within his mind, it is non-different. His meditation on Krishna and seeing Krishna as the lover of the gopis, his mind so fixed on Krishna is the same absolute realm as a devotee sitting down chanting Hare Krishna, or as a devotee worshipping the deity, or as a devotee, you know, reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the same absolute platform that Krishna is present and the devotee is meditating upon him, you know, in complete samadhi. So it's absolute, but you know, for each particular devotee, there will be, especially amongst those five, and you know, different variations of those. Like part of deity worship, of course, is also honouring prasadam, you know, and distributing prasadam to the guests. That's also deity worship. So, according to a specific attachment that a devotee has, it doesn't have to be to everything in devotional service. Some devotees keep to themselves a lot, and they just, you know, like to, but, you know, there's some association. They don't have to. We don't have to. Everyone is doing, you know, everything fully all the time. You know, it naturally, you know, devotees will develop a particular taste in something, and you know, by that becoming their entire life in one, you know, they can't live without that particular aspect of devotional service. That becomes their saving grace. I remember, you know, saying to my spiritual master that, you know, I love to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. I always have. You know, I was reading Prabhupada's book before I ever met a devotee. I read Nectar Devotion and Bhagavad Gita before I even knew devotees existed, and I loved them. And I once said to my spiritual master, you know, I'd love to read Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, that'll be your saving grace. You know, there's so many things that I'm not very good at, nearly everything else. You know, even Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, it's not like I know so much, but I just love to read it. So, you know, but that, if you have one thing in devotional service that you can't live without, that accelerates your ruchi, your taste, and accelerates it to the degree that it manifests bhava, even in the beginning stages, very quickly catapults one. And that bhava, you know, then becomes more and more purified and matures into love of God. But still, although one thing may be there, the foundation of chanting Hare Krishna, because of the nature of this, you know, how the mind is always disturbed in Kali Yuga, that's the best thing to keep us fixed, the chanting. And then, you know, along with that, there may be some other thing that accelerates your taste. Yeah. So when, you know, when you'll, you know, sometimes those things, that taste is there from the very beginning, and sometimes, you know, by Krishna's grace, you stumble across, you know, some particular activity, and all of a sudden, you know, you realize, you know, out of everything, you know, I couldn't live without that, you know, not for a moment. And when that, you know, becomes, just fills your whole consciousness, there's no room for anything else. There's no room for sex life, no room for drugs, you know, there's no room for, you know, there's no room for Maya. Any other questions or comments? Jai, walk with Srila Prabhupada.